to look than Iran's neighbor, Iraq, that has the second largest oil reserves in the world. So attention gets turned to Iraq, and Ronald Reagan opens up ties with Saddam Hussein, supports Saddam Hussein in the war against Iran.
This is when Don Rumsfeld comes over and we see those pictures of him shaking hands with Saddam Hussein.
That's right. That's right. And what was happening was that U.S. business was also very, very eager to get into Iraq because Iraq had potential to be an incredibly wealthy society. And U.S. companies like Halliburton and Bechtel and Lockheed Martin all went into Iraq. The Bechtel Corporation, for example, managed a petrochemical complex for Saddam Hussein.
And this is all in the mid-'80s while Iraq is fighting a war with Iran.
That's right.
An extremely deadly war. About a million people died in the Iran-Iraq war. People don't realize how damaging this war was to all sides. But we were on Iraq's side, and then later on with the Iran-Contra affair, we're on Iran's side as well. Was this sort of... Did both sides know we were on the other country's side?
No, there was an attempt to play both sides of the fence, to have Iran believe that we were supporting Iran, Iraq believe that we were supporting Iran, Iraq. We were sort of supporting Iran. We were very much supporting Iraq.
Now, one thing that's interests me, because there's a lot of talk about, you know, why we have to topple Saddam, and people mention his brutal gassing of so many Kurdish Iraqis with chemical weapons in the late 80s. How much were we supporting Iraq during that time?
Oh, fully and fundamentally. We supported, so Lockheed Martin sold Saddam helicopters. Bechtel managed, again, a petrochemical complex that made the precursor to mustard gas that was then used on the Kurds.
So Bechtel made the gas that killed the Kurds.
Managed the complex.
The gas. All right.
Let's not get ourselves secret.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
So the complex was in Iraq. Producing this gas, and Bechtel was managing it.
We sold Saddam computers. We gave him intelligence. We sold him arms. We loaned him money, billions of dollars with which he could then turn around and buy our products. We completely supported this dictator. Now, there was one really key objective. That was to gain access to Iraq's oil. Now, what Saddam Hussein did do was sign marketing contracts with U.S. oil companies. Exxon, Chevron are the two leaders. They were able to, you know, pick up Iraq's oil on the border and then ship it out and essentially sell it to themselves. Now,
to themselves meaning the American oil companies, Exxon.
That's right.
Mobil,
so these are
Chevron.
It's important to understand that these are vertically integrated companies. So they do within one company exploration, production, refining, marketing, and sales.
They take it out of the ground and all the way to the consumer.
That's right. So if they're marketing oil, they're not really sort of shipping it out into the global market. They're selling it to themselves to then sell at their own stations.
What were the profits at these times? Well, I mean, how much money are we talking about? Billions of dollars, I assume?
Trillions of dollars.
Trillions of dollars.
Yeah, this is a lot of oil we're talking about.
All right, not even billions,
and it's worth,
but trillions of dollars.
Worth a lot of
thousand
money.
Thousand billion.
Yes. $1,000 billion, and easily. And this is good, but not what the companies wanted.
It certainly makes Exxon very profitable.
It helps with Exxon.
You say it wasn't what they wanted. In the 80s, weren't they happy?
They weren't happy in the 80s. They weren't
even
happy in the early 90s.
Well, so even prior to the sanctions, prior to the Persian Gulf War, that wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough because what they wanted was access to Iraq's oil under the ground. So Saddam Hussein had a nationalized oil system.
Isn't it all under the ground?
No, seriously,
I'm not sure what you mean by under the ground. How is that different from what they were using already?
So the big question in oil is who owns the reserves? So prior to the 1970s, the oil companies owned the reserves everywhere.
They owned Iraqis national reserves.
Yeah, in Iraq
Americans
it happened
too?
More like 1961. Yeah.
Okay.
The British in predominated, is that a word?
Yes, it is a word, actually.
In Iraq, and the French.
Uh-huh. So they owned all the oil under the ground.
They owned the oil under the ground, that's right.
Because Iraqis signed agreements to give them all the oil under the ground.
Well, Iraq, of course, didn't exist as a country.
Iraq was a British creation to begin with.
Right, right.
So
the British
created the government.
Took the oil.
To let them take.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's a weekly review. All topics are valid. Feel free to call in and let me know what you think. 888-488-MARK. Lots to talk about as usual. As usual, Iraq is descending into worse and worse anarchy. Lately, well, we have the largest bomb to date. You know, news out of Iraq, when you get some killings and all, it's no longer news anymore that, you know, 10 GIs are killed or 15 Americans are dead here or 60 Iraqis are killed in this explosion or 300 are killed in a single day. It's not even news anymore. Well, I guess the terrorists or whoever they are, the civil warriors, still can make some news because they did detonate a single bomb. They killed 125 civilians in Baghdad. Yay, yay, rah, rah, a new record. Terrific. I guess that's what they have to do to still make the front pages these days, as we have 3,000 Americans wounded, 3,000 killed, 23,000 wounded and counting, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. Need we remind anyone that on September 11th that 3,000 Americans were killed and now another 3,000 are killed in Iraq and we haven't accomplished anything? Massive migration from the country. Massive millions of people are leaving. The Democrats and some Republicans are working on a non-binding resolution to stop the war in Iraq. And they may go on with a binding one as the president proposes billions and billions more, while a few Republicans, including the president, argues that to dare oppose the war just emboldens the enemy. That's okay. His friends are making money. We still have massive contracts out so that Halliburton and others can make billions from this war. Where do you think your taxpayer money is going to? And Bush wants bipartisanship, but only in private. We'll talk about this hour. He wants to cut billions from your Social Security to fund Halliburton and his friends in the oil industry. Remember, Exxon made the highest profit last year of any company in American history, $40 billion. That's with a B, $40 billion. Add all the oil companies' profits together, and guess what, folks? No deficit. Don't think their money will be going to there. No. They'd much rather take it from your Social Security money. Meanwhile, here in Washington, the Cheney Gate trial is going on. I used to call it Traitor Gate, but ever since I've labeled Vice President Cheney the traitor of Traitor Gate, it's clear more and more and more that he was determined to discredit Joe Wilson, Ambassador Joe Wilson, who he hired to go to Niger to find out the truth. And when Joe Wilson found out the truth, that is, that Saddam Hussein wasn't getting nuclear weapons, Dick Cheney was willing to commit treason in order to try to discredit him. We haven't had a vice president committing treason since Aaron Burr, but Dick Cheney is the second one. Meanwhile, there are real threats. Iran is a real threat, and I'm completely torn, and we'll talk about that this hour too if you want. I'm completely torn between the neocons, the Bushites, the people who can't do anything right, who I wouldn't trust to boil me eggs, much less go into war, and those on the left who say, you know, Iran's no big deal, just let it go, while its crazy head is out talking about a second Holocaust. Yikes. Isn't there anything in between? I have a comment from a listener. I want to talk about that, too, this hour. I went on XM Satellite Radio, as I do every Friday, and was disagreeing with my co-host, Mark Thompson, about Louis Farrakhan. I think he's an anti-Semite. I think he's a racist. I think he's a bigot. Well, a writer writes in to disagree with me. I want to address that as well. So there's lots to talk about this hour. There's Virginia, my home state, which has sponsored a resolution saying regret for slavery, but no apology for slavery. On the Katrina front, we have Benny Thompson pressing George Bush in the private Democratic meeting. wanting to know why it wasn't included in his State of the Union speech. I knew Sarge would be happy to hear about that. You'll want to hear Bush's response. And, of course, there's all about the interview that we dealt with just last week with Dick Cheney and his daughter, Mary Cheney, and why she is trying to keep her private life out of public life at the same time as her father and the president are trying to deny equal rights to gay couples all across the United States. So there's a lot I want to talk about, but I want to hear from you. I want to know which topics you think are important and you want to address. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can also comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. And we'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
from Washington. More of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Heck, you can even talk about the Super Bowl yesterday if you want to. I'm not quite sure what the political end of it is, except that I guess that if you can't hold on to the ball and it keeps slipping out of your hand in rainstorm after rainstorm, maybe you should try another strategy. I don't know. Bad analogy, perhaps. But what's going on in Iraq is no laughing matter. What's interesting is if you just look at what's going on the ground, increasingly civil war is actually an understatement because it's not just Shia and Sunni and Kurds fighting each other. You have Shia on Shia violence and Sunni on Sunni violence. You have all kinds of attacks, each upon the other. And it's basically a question of anarchy. What do? We remove the central government and we didn't put anything in its place. So everyone is struggling for control. Everyone wants power. We have created, indeed, the situation very similar to what happened in Afghanistan after the Soviets left. We have created anarchy. And so one of the things that I find most extraordinary about the Bush administration is they say, in effect, look, I spilt this coffee all over the floor. And now, I have to clean it up, and I've decided I'm going to clean it up with a fork. And you say to someone, you can't really clean up for a fork, and then they say, hold back, don't you see? There's hot coffee on the floor. And you say, yes, and you spilt it, but I don't really think you can clean it up with a fork. Hey, if you don't want to help me clean up the coffee with my fork, then you're just part of the problem. That coffee is on the floor. It's staining everything. It's spreading now. Going across the floor, the desk. It's spreading, destroying more things. So go ahead, grab your fork and help me. You know, Iraq is a colossal mess. And it's a colossal mess because we caused it to be. But that doesn't mean there aren't answers. Yes, there are no easy answers. I'll be the first to agree with you there. After having made such a colossal mess that they have, I mean, when are we going to find the peaceful Iraqis that want to put their country together? I'll tell you where they are. I know where they are. They're in Jordan and Iran and Syria and Egypt and Europe and the United States. They've left. So we're really not going to get much help out of them. And the people who are left are those who are too poor to leave or too angry to leave. So what is the answer? Well, I disagree with Joe Biden on a lot of things, and I certainly disagree with him on support for this war. But one thing I think he's got right is undoing the problem of Iraq to begin with. Iraq began a World War I after World War I because the British designed arbitrary boundaries combining Kurds, Shia, and Sunni. They wanted the oil of the Kurds. They wanted to give their allies, the Sunnis, control after their king got kicked out of Saudi Arabia. And they wanted to take a good part of the Shiites, too. They just drew the lines, folks. You ever seen Iraq's port? It's just tiny, tiny. They drew the lines. They put them together. They don't make any sense. And I think we maybe need to draw new lines. Look, the Soviet Union, when it fell apart, each of its constituent parts became separate countries. It's not in great shape, but some of its parts are doing better, some are doing worse. It's not undergoing civil war in most of its places. And one of the few places that it is, places like Chechnya, it's because, again, the boundaries don't allow the Chechens to have their independent state. When Yugoslavia fell apart, when its dictator Tito went to the dustbin of history, what happened? Well, Slovenia and Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina and Macedonia, each component part, Serbia, Montenegro, wanted to control themselves. In fact, one of the few things that's allowing the European Union to come together is the fact that they have been separated for so many years into France and Germany and Netherlands and English, each in Italian, each with their own culture, each with their own language. And once they've done that for a while, they are secure in themselves that they can come together as a European Union. And there are problems with that as well. The point is that when people are insecure, when they don't trust who's controlling them, and there is no strong central government, they're going to turn to the people they know. their friends, their allies, heck, even people who aren't their friends. You know, I saw a poll, interesting poll in Iraq. 98% of the Shia don't trust al-Qaeda. Well, that makes sense. Al-Qaeda is a Sunni terrorist group. But you know what percentage of Sunnis don't trust al-Qaeda? 94% in the same poll. 94% of Sunnis don't trust the Sunni terrorist group al-Qaeda. So for all this discussion that, oh, al-Qaeda is going to be this huge threat if we leave Iraq, al-Qaeda is marginalized. Al-Qaeda is not the threat. The threat in Iraq is internal. The threat in Iraq is Iraqis to each other. And the only way we're ever going to resolve the problem is the way we should resolve most of these problems. Draw some lines. They're going to be imperfect, but draw some lines basically where the Shias live and where the Sunnis live. And probably there'll be some ethnic cleansing as people are forced to cross one line or the other. But that may be the only way the war can stop. Look, when the British left India and Pakistan back in the late 1940s, it was all one British Empire. And the Muslims and the Hindus fought and fought, and they came up with a line, and it's not a perfect line. They're still fighting over Kashmir. But 26 million people were forced out of their homes. It's not a pretty sight. But yeah, ethnic cleansing. The Muslims went to their side. The Hindus went to their side. And, well, it's more or less stable. Frankly, the same thing happened in Europe. Right? I mean, you know what happened after World War II. Germany was conquering Poland. Poland fought back. Poland took back what is today. Poland is most of what was Eastern Germany then. And the Germans, having lost the war, had to go back to Germany, even if they'd lived in Poland for hundreds and hundreds of years. It ain't pretty, folks. But it's about the only way I know to stop civil war. And I'm not saying it's a good alternative. It's just the least bad one. Get the people in a room. Draw some lines. If they won't agree, you can do like Clinton did at Camp David and say, well, here are the lines I think they should be. And if one side disagrees, I'll blame them. That's what happened with Bill Clinton. The Israelis agreed, the Palestinians disagreed, and the entire world knew that Yasser Arafat didn't want peace. The same can be said for the Shiites and the Sunnis. And at the very least, I mean, we have a Shiite state. It's called Iran. We've got oodles and oodles of Sunni states. At the very least, the Kurds deserve a state. They're really the most democratic part of Iraq. They've been more or less independent since 1992, since we had the no-fly zones over northern Kurdistan. They're pro-American. They have a lot of oil. What's not to love? Meanwhile, though, as long as we're there, trying to hold together what cannot be held together, massive, massive murder, killings, bombs, migration. And those of us that try to propose another solution are told by George Bush and our new Defense Secretary Robert Gates, we're emboldening the enemy. Emboldening the enemy. Mr. President, the enemy, such as it is pretty boldened already. But you can't even tell where it is. Is it the Shia? Is it the Sunni? Is it our own prime minister of Iraq that we helped install, Maliki, who supports Muqtada al-Sadr, who murdered so many Americans in Fallujah? We don't even know who the enemy is. We have met the enemy, and it is us. It is the contractors that are making hundreds and billions of dollars off this war effort. That is the enemy. It's your friends at Halliburton. It's the oil companies that are trying to get that oh-so-sweet oil contracts that will make them hundreds of billions of dollars while costing us hundreds of billions of dollars and 3,000 American lives and 20,000 wounded and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives. We have met the enemy, and it is us. And I don't want to embolden us. I want to de-bolden us. I'll create that word. I want us to be less bold. Yes, there are real threats in the world. Yes, North Korea and Iran are real threats. I am not a pacifist. And if you want to call in and talk about Iran, I'll admit to you, it's a very difficult topic because I don't trust Bush. And I don't trust the people in the peace groups either who seem to want to leave it alone. I don't trust that either. Yeah, well, you know me. I've always been sort of a Clinton Democrat rather than a Kucinich Democrat. Sorry, folks. I know I got lots of Kucinich supporters out there. We can argue about that if you want. But I don't think either side has the answer. I think the answer when dealing with a dangerous situation is not use force first, ask questions later. That's the Bush doctrine. Nor is it roll over, ignore it, and let it kill, which I think some on the left would do. I don't agree with that either. I think you slowly increase the pressure through sanctions, if necessary, up to and including helping democratic elements within that country. And yes, as an absolute last resort, use of force. You slowly ratchet it up. If we'd done that in Iraq, we would have learned early on from the inspectors there were no weapons of mass destruction. We wouldn't have had to go to war in Iraq. Meanwhile, $1.2 trillion, it's been estimated, is the cost of this war and all it's, before it's done, and all its debt and all its lost lives. You know, we've already spent almost $400 billion on the war. Remember Hillary's health care plan? Universal health care for all Americans? It was considered in 1993 and 94 so expensive and so outrageous we couldn't possibly support it. Do you know what the upper end estimates of that plan for 10 years were? About $400 billion. About the total cost we've spent in Iraq in less than 5 years. Think what we could do with that kind of money at home. So what's the answer? Is it a non-binding resolution? Is it cutting off funding? What do we do about Exxon and its $40 billion oil profits? And what about all those other issues I mentioned at the top of the hour? Let me know what you think should be done. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Help us de-bolden the enemy. Not de-bold the company, Sue, who writes it on the web. No, not de-bold. But make us a bit less bold. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Well, let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Of course, the war in Iraq does hang on heavy over most of Washington. That is what most people are focused on, along with the non-binding resolution that's coming forward in the Senate. It's actually putting Republicans in a lot of trouble. Of course, Republicans very rarely go against the President of the United States. They don't seem to have independent minds. But 20 of them are up for re-election. 20. That's a lot. 20 of all 49 Republicans in the Senate, almost half of them, not a third, are up for re-election, including in blue states like Oregon and New Hampshire and Minnesota. And they're feeling the heat, folks. And that's a good thing. Keep making them feel the heat. They don't know how to vote. They can't even decide whether, in a non-binding way, to criticize the President of the United States. And I'm glad the Democrats are putting them to the test. But, of course, it's not enough. No, the non-binding resolution has to be the first straw, but not the last straw. George Bush is coming to Congress just this month. Heck, probably next week. With a request for another $320 billion to spend on Iraq. We've already spent some $400. He wants to almost double the price. I mean, I guess he wants to get the money now because he knows it can be cut off later. But once he's got it, he can run with it. At the same time, he says Americans are getting too much in Social Security. Got to cut that. Americans are getting too much Medicare. Got to stop that. Students are getting too much of a break on student loans. Workers are making too much money, he says, as the average wage in America decreases year by year by year. But the super rich aren't rich enough. And so he wants to extend his tax cuts, the kind that gave, oh, millionaires hundreds of thousands of dollars and gave you folks, you and me, about $300. We didn't get hundreds of thousands. He wants to extend those, even though, according to the Congressional Budget Office, it will lead, of course, to deficits as far out as the eye can see. At the same time, he wants to keep borrowing your Social Security money, the kind that you put in when you pay your payroll taxes. He's using it now to finance Iraq. He wants to keep using it to finance Iraq. But when you comes time for you to retire, well, he wants to cut your benefits or raise your Social Security taxes. He wants to use our Social Security money to fund Iraq. But then he doesn't want to do anything to help Social Security. Folks, we all know what's going on here. What would you do about it? 888-488-MARK. One thing I also want to talk about is the Virginia legislature, which has passed its regret for slavery, its profound regret. Not to start. It wasn't an apology. Apparently the Republicans couldn't handle the word apology. They felt that someone might come sue them for reparations if there were an apology. I don't see that legally. But it's a start. It's a start. Now, when is the United States Congress going to give the same apology? Is it really that hard to apologize for slavery? Is it really that difficult? Frankly, if it weren't for Delegate Hargrove, the guy that told blacks to get over it and said, what are we going to do, blame the Jews for killing Jesus? Nice guy. If it weren't for him, it probably wouldn't have gotten the support that it did in the Virginia legislature. And I guess one of the things that concerns me about all of this, though, is we have to understand the difference between apologizing for slavery, which is absolutely right, and some form of reparations, which in some form I've discussed on air, and I do support. We can talk about that if you want. And trying to blame everyone for the sins of a few. That is racism. That is bigotry. It's one thing to condemn the United States of America for our awful history, and I have no problem doing that. The United States of America condones slaves, condones slave ships, passed laws to protect slave owners. The Dred Scott decision, the Fugitive Slave Act, the slave ships across the Atlantic Passage. The United States, as a country, murdered Native Americans and took their land. That's a fact. State after state in the South, and some in the North, but mostly in the South, passed Jim Crow laws to prevent blacks from having equality. States and the federal government need to apologize for that. And individuals, families, fine. You know, if your family owned slaves and you want to make an apology because your ancestors owned slaves, so be it. But I think we have to be careful about blaming individuals, because then we're doing the same racism that others are doing. And I think this all came to the fore when I went on air on my XM satellite show on Fridays and was talking with my co-host, Mark Thompson, a good friend of mine. We actually come from the same hometown in Nashville, Tennessee. And we were talking about probably the only person in the world that really divides blacks and Jews, Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. Because prior to the Nation of Islam, prior to Farrakhan, as Mark and I talked about, Jews and blacks were marching hand in hand. Jews helped fund the NAACP. They certainly marched with Martin Luther King. They were in disproportionate numbers, active in the civil rights era. And I'm proud to say my own aunt, my mother's sister, was down there in Mississippi Freedom Summer, helping register blacks, risking her life to do that. And I'm not saying that to say that, you know, she's better than anyone else. I am proud of her. I am. I'm proud of my family history. But simply to recognize that Jews were disproportionately there for blacks. I am proud of that. That doesn't mean there weren't many, many non-Jews, Christians, atheists, and others who were there as well, simply to point that out. But Louis Farrakhan has an agenda, and his agenda is to try to change history. And this is Black History Month, and I think it's important that we not let Louis Farrakhan change history, because that's what he wants to do. What happened historically in the slave trade? Let's talk about it. What happened was African tribes conquered other African tribes, captured their POWs, their prisoners of war, made them slaves, and sold them to the white man. They didn't go into the internals of Africa. They would be on the coast, and they would buy the slaves from the Africans and take them to America. And many of these African tribes that sold slaves were Muslim. Does that mean all Muslims are bad? No, of course not. But let's recognize that Muslim tribes played a major role in the slave trade, as did the white slave ships, right? And they brought them to this country. Now, Louis Farrakhan has decided that he wants to pick on Jews, largely because he relates to Muslims, and there is, of course, an ongoing conflict, which is sort of a separate issue, but if you want to talk about it, we can, but going on in Israel. Israel wants to exist. Israel wants the Arab Jews who live there, who are the majority of its population, to exist rather than be murdered. The Arabs don't want a Jewish state to exist. They preferred to leave their Jews in second-class citizenship and poverty. And, of course, they expelled hundreds of thousands of Jews and And they had no place to go except Israel. That's sort of a separate issue. But because Farrakhan is trying to get away from Christianity and trying to embrace Islam, he's embarrassed about the Islamic role in the slave trade. So he emphasizes, get this, a Jewish role. Now, were there ever any Jews in history involved in the slave trade? Of course there were. There were Jews. There were Christians. There were Muslims. There were atheists. I don't know if there are any Buddhists or Hindus, but you know what? There might have been. And by finding one or two Jews involved in the slave trade, he claims that Jews today are responsible for what a very, very few, far less than 1% of Jews did hundreds of years ago. And by doing that, he can do a little race baiting here. He can make black people angry and out to do violence against Jews. Well, I said basically this on the air last Friday, and a listener wrote in. He wrote into the show, XM, and I posted his comment on my website. You can see it for yourself at RadioInsideScoop.com, attacking me pretty strongly. I want to address that comment, and also feel free to take your calls right after the break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy. Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. How often do you hear about the Christian role in slavery? I venture to say that you almost never hear about a Christian role in slavery, even though the great vast majority of slave owners were Christian. And that's because it was the individual slave owners that were Christian. And yes, there were churches in the South that said slavery was fine. If you want to cite those preachers and so forth and talk about a Christian role, I guess you can. But there were also churches in the North that supported abolition, that very much were against slavery, not to mention all those Union soldiers, most of whom were Christian. I point that out because how silly it is for someone like Louis Farrakhan to talk about a Jewish role in slavery. There may have been one or two Jewish slave traders. I don't dispute that. But I've never heard of, rabbis or the majority of the Jewish population supporting slavery. Indeed, the great majority of Jews were abolitionists. There were some that had slaves. There were blacks that owned slaves. But to point out a specific Jewish role, I argue, is the kind of racism, the kind of anti-Semitism that is used to try to incite violence against the Jewish people. And I have a listener that strongly disagrees with me. He wrote in a very long letter make it plain to the XM satellite show that I'm on. And I'll tell you this, I respect his willingness to write me a letter and to call in and to let me know his views. I very much respect that and I appreciate that. And Iyamdi, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Greetings, Brother Mark. I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, I know you disagree with me, so let it rip.
Well, I pretty much, unfortunately, your listeners do not have the luxury of being able to have witnessed or listened to the radio show that you were on with Brother Matsumela, Matt Fumo, on The Power. But what I did observe in your conversation, and I did make reference to it in the letter, is that even within your breath and the way that you were speaking, it was very quick. It was very shallow. It was without a lot of thought. And I just, your opinion of Brother Minister Farrakhan is to me without any validation. He has every right to speak about the Jewish involvement in slavery. You mentioned the Christianity involvement. Well, we can go back to the Council of Nicene in 325 A.D., where the actual beginnings of the initiations of slavery and justifying slavery. And in fact, I'd like to go one step further and say that it is not actually there was no slavery when involving Africans. They were abducted. It was a criminal. It was a criminal act. It was a crime. It was not just indentured slaves that came on and were enslaved for 7 years, and then they worked off their time to their master, and they are set free. As the European serfs, those who are called serfs, if you look up in history, those were indentured white slaves. There were white slaves here in America, and they were called...
Yes, there were white indentured servants. But the point is that everyone had a hand in the slave trade. Certainly Africans had a hand in it. Christians had a hand in it. Why does Louis Farrakhan, and why do you talk about a Jewish role? If you were talking, if you were saying to me that, Mark, I looked up in history and I found out that one slave trader was Jewish, you know, I'd say I'm sure that's true. I wouldn't dispute that. When you say a Jewish role, that implies that somehow Jews got together and their head rabbi said, let's go out and let's bring slaves, when, as you must know, far less than 1% of Jews had any involvement in slavery. It wasn't sanctioned by any leading rabbinical sources. So to talk about a Jewish role in slavery is to really try to, I think, blame all Jews for the actions of a few. And I wouldn't want to do that with any people. I wouldn't want to blame all blacks for the actions of a few blacks or all Muslims for the actions of a few Muslims. Why don't you think Louis Farrakhan is exactly trying to do that?
I do not think that that's what Farrakhan is doing. And what I see what Farrakhan is doing, what he did not only for what he's doing to address that and what he's addressed in terms of my Caucasian Christian culture from the South, is that he brings light to these issues, and these issues need to be addressed. I do live in this house of the racist South. I do live in this house. And while I live in this house and I have this information about the role of slavery with white Christians or white Jews, whatever the case may be, I've got to take responsibility. Even if, you know, if only one person in your house commits a crime, Mark, you should feel compelled to take care of that individual, not sweep it under the rug like most of Europeans or Caucasians do in modern times.
Well, why is Farrakhan focused on a Jewish role rather than a Christian role, or better yet, on a white role or a slave owner's role?
I don't understand where you get the idea that he focuses on. And out of all the materials that I've read, all the speeches that I've heard, you talk about the 1%, right? That was represented. His conversations with his own people are probably about that much. About 1% is addressed. He does not focus. That's not his. He is not like Bush focusing on the fact that he thinks he's going to win this war. No more than Farrakhan is focusing on the Jews being the primary reason for slavery. He does not do that, and you should not represent him in that way, because he does not and has not done that. And he does not offend me in any way either. I am Caucasian, male, southern born, could have all the privileges of all Caucasians.
Let me read you a comment he made in Philadelphia in August 05. Okay? He says, I'm not an anti-Semite. I never been one. I do not hate the Jewish people. Put that down. What I hate is the degree of control that they exercise over black intellectual cultural expression. I do not think no human being should determine how high we can go. That can only be determined by God and by us. What control do Jewish people exercise over black intellectual cultural expression? Do I exercise control over black intellectual cultural expression?
Absolutely. Unequivocally.
I do. How do I do that?
And not you as the specific Mark. I'm talking about as the universal Jewish role, even in modern-day civil rights.
The universal Jewish role?
Yes.
How can you say there's any universal Jewish role? We don't get together and make this.
Let me address that, okay?
Because the Catholic Church has a hierarchy. They've got the Pope. We don't even have a hierarchy. We Jews disagree among ourselves about just about everything. So what is the role of the Jewish people rather than the roles of a few Jews, which is you can complain about ex-Jew. You know, I complain all the time about Paul Wolfowitz. That's fine. I don't mind you complaining about him or Joe Lieberman or anybody else. But what is the role of the whole Jewish people in holding down blacks? I don't get it.
As Martha Mela addressed on the show, when it came to civil rights and when it came to SCLC, now listen, I played a very large role in my youth. It was a large role to me, not to the actual civil rights movement, but I actually spent a lot of time at the King Center in Atlanta in my teenage youth and studying nonviolence. So alluding to inciting violence is certainly not anything that I feel that Farrakhan was addressing, nor is it something that I would certainly advocate as well. But what I'm saying to you is that you spoke about your aunt that served on I apologize, I don't recall what the name was.
She didn't serve on any committee. What she did is she helped register black people in Mississippi in 1964. That's what she did.
Well, what Martha Mela was addressing on the show that was not dealt with any further was the fact that there were people sitting on that board. And when Brother Benjamin Chavis started to speak with Farrakhan, he at one point, of course, was the leader. And he was, because of the Jewish presence on that committee, and you have to bear witness to that fact, that he was let go because of the influence of Jewish folks on that committee. Now, that answers your question, and it should answer
well,
it for yourself.
It does, and I'm afraid we're running out of time, but I'll tell you this. I really hope you'll call in again on this show, or you can obviously call in with me and Matsumela Memfumi with Mark Thompson on Friday. We'll be back on as usual, 4 to 6:30. But it seems to me that if you have a complaint with individual Jews, That's fine. I have no problem with that. I complain about individuals all the time, whether they be Jewish, Christian, Muslim, atheist, Hindu, or Buddhist. But it's very different, I think, when you complain about individuals and when you talk about the Jewish people, because that suggests there's some massive conspiracy where we all Jews get together and, you know, plot a plan of action. And that, frankly, is the kind of anti-Semitic propaganda that the Soviet Union used to put out and the Russian czars used to put out, and it would usually be right before a bunch of people went into Jewish areas and started massacring Jews. So that's my problem with Louis Farrakhan. I want people to focus on individuals, not all of us. I'm afraid that's all the time we have, Yamdi, but I'll tell you this. You can call in any time on my show between 2 and 3. You can call in this Friday. I want to carry this conversation further. It's just that my show ends at 3 o'clock, and I can't go any further right now. Thank you for calling in. The debate is not over.
A critical eye. Appreciate it, Brother Mark.
Thank you so much. That's it for the Inside Scoop, folks. Tune in tomorrow as we talk about the way to respond to the war in Iraq. That's it for the Inside Scoop. And this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. A bone-chilling, frostbite-inducing, nasty Arctic cold wave has swept across the northern plains and into the Great Lakes region, plunging the mercury to 38 below. Folks are dealing with the usual plethora of cold weather maladies, frozen locks, dead batteries, kids staying home from school. Today, President Bush gives Congress his $2.9 trillion spending plan for the 2008 budget year. He's proposing his tax cuts be made permanent and cutting back on domestic spending. He's also asking for a major increase in his military budget. In Baghdad today, various violent incidents around the city have killed at least 29 and wounded at least 104. A U.S.-Iraqi campaign to stabilize Baghdad will begin soon, and the offensive against the militants will be on a scale never before seen during 4 years of war. In Fort Lewis, Washington, the first U.S. soldier to be court-martialed for refusing to go to Iraq on moral grounds will be sentenced today. He faces 4 years in prison. On Capitol Hill today, Republicans are threatening to use a procedural strategy to prevent a Senate vote on a nonpartisan, non-binding resolution opposing President Bush's troop surge in Iraq. Both the President and Vice President say that if a resolution is adopted, they'll ignore it. Prosecutors in the Lewis Scooter at Libby perjury trial may rest their case as early as tomorrow. The defense is expected to call Libby's former boss, Vice President Dick Cheney. Reuters reports European diplomats today said Iran has installed 328 underground centrifuges in one of its nuclear plants. A test run is scheduled soon. If successful, the centrifuges would provide a method for industrial-scale enrichment of uranium. The London Sunday Times contains a letter by three top U.S. military leaders, now retired, urging the White House to use diplomacy, not military might, with Iran. The senior officers say invading Iran would be disastrous. U.S. General Dan McNeil has been handed the reins of NATO forces. More than 3,000 U.S. troops have had their tours extended in anticipation of a spring surge by Taliban forces in Afghanistan. A leading Japanese newspaper says North Korea is demanding 500,000 tons of oil annually in exchange for abandoning its nuclear reactor. Six-party talks on North Korea's nuclear weaponry program resume in Beijing on Thursday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distant guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future.
Your host, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, hi everybody here. I am filling in for Dr. Bill O'Brien here on a beautiful but cold Wednesday here in Chicago, the windy city, the city of the big shoulders, the city by the lake. A lot of different names for Chicago. How's everybody doing out there? It's 16 degrees outside, according to the Chicago Tribune website. And that's a little bit, that's a mite chilly, as we might say down there when I was living down there. And so that's a mite chilly. And we had a little snow. Actually, when I started the show on Monday, I was saying, well, we hadn't had any snow yet. And while the show was going on the air, it was snowing. Not real bad, maybe about an inch, not even that much, half an inch perhaps. I did shovel the sidewalk a little bit because, you know, the thing about snow, and I love snow, by the way, but the problem with snow is that it turns into ice. And while you can walk on snow, and while snow is pleasant to pile into snowballs and toss at people, ice is not pleasant at all. So if you don't wipe down your sidewalk, if you don't shovel off your sidewalk, even a little bit of snow, if it stays overnight and freezes, that's a real serious walking problem. The other problem I have is that because it gets cold, I sometimes have to turn on my space heater. Now, my landlord doesn't like me to turn on the space heater because it costs more electricity, and I understand that. The other problem I have with it is that it dries the air out. And when it dries the air out, that's when my throat gets all bad, and that's why I couldn't do the show last Friday, because I got a bad throat infection and really dry sinuses. I think I mentioned it in the last show. I had a nasty nosebleed, and it was all coming from my sinuses, and it just wouldn't stop. I mean, I hold my head back and it stopped for a while, but then I put it back down and come right back down again, because the bleed wasn't in the nose, it was in the sinuses. So it was really, really nasty, and fortunately I'm over it, although I had to turn it on last night and my throat feels dry again. So I just have to be careful. I have to keep hydrating myself, and I hate the fact that